So before I begin, since I'm being recorded, would anyone be offended if I use the B word? Raise your hand. No? Okay. I would first like to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Lucia Nang, who's in the back, Dr. Donna Richter, Dr. Ruth Saunders, Dr. Richard Saul, and Libby Bogdan-Lovis. I have no relationships to disclose. Although black women represent 12% of the U.S. population of women, black women account for 61% of estimated AIDS cases among women in the United States. National trends further indicate that the majority of women diagnosed with HIV are childbearing age. So this has serious implications for perinatal transmission and reproductive health intentions of women. Advances in highly active antiretroviral therapy over the past two decades has led to substantial reductions in perinatal transmission. The rates are now less than 2% in the United States. However, 100 to 200 infants are still infected with HIV each year. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported in 2005 that 142 infants were infected with HIV. 66% of those infants were born to black mothers, so we have huge disparities. Racial and ethnic disparities persist in the state of South Carolina. In South Carolina, 4,540 women are estimated to be living with HIV/AIDS. Black women, again, are disproportionately impacted as they represent 80% of HIV/AIDS cases. Consistent with the national disparity, the majority of these women diagnosed are of childbearing age. For instance, more than 8 of every 10 infants who are infected with HIV, again, are born to black mothers. So as black women constitute a larger part of the epidemic, it's important for us to understand women's reproductive health intentions to develop effective public health interventions to reduce perinatal transmission, in addition to transmission to potentially uninfected sexual partners. So now for the public health relevance. Numerous research studies suggest that HIV-positive women's pregnancy intentions differ very little from that of non-infected women. HIV-positive women continue to express their intentions and their desires to have children. The promotion of the social ideology that people are living with HIV/AIDS rather than existing as a mere extension of their illness has been one of the approaches to lessen individual and societal level HIV stigma. While societal norms and expectations promote motherhood for women, some HIV-positive women are discouraged from becoming pregnant since total pregnancy avoidance is the only way to eliminate mother-to-child transmission risk, to completely eliminate. The inherent conflicts in these two societal messages can be characterized as a double bind, and those conflicts are especially germane to the experiences of underserved HIV-positive women. Hence, we want to work on developing public health approaches that focus on reducing HIV incidence while also respecting the reproductive autonomy and rights of HIV-positive women. Okay, so the purpose of this study... The purpose of the study was to examine the intrapersonal, interpersonal, and community-level factors associated with HIV-positive women's intentions to become pregnant. We additionally sought to examine the degree to which the intimate partnership influences women's intentions to become pregnant. So data were collected from June 2009 to July 2010, and we recruited women primarily from 5 clinics and 8 service organizations in the state of South Carolina. We conducted face-to-face in-depth interviews with 42 HIV-positive black women of childbearing capacity. And these interviews were conducted in private locations. And some of the locations included the clinics where the women were receiving treatment. We additionally interviewed some women at our university. Some women didn't have transportation, so we were able to go to their homes and conduct those interviews. And actually, something that we didn't expect, several women invited me to their home, but when I arrived at their home, they said that their housemates weren't aware of their HIV status, so they asked if I could just conduct the interview in my car. So I did about 9 or 10 interviews in my car. And women received $25 for completing the interview. We recorded the interviews, transcribed them, and reviewed them, and we analyzed the data using in vivo 8 software, and we employed a multi-tiered coding process to analyze it. So here's a map, a county map of the study setting. We had 5 counties where we recruited from and also conducted the interviews. These counties include Richland, Lexington, Orangeburg, and at the bottom you can see Hampton and Beaufort counties, and these counties are part of South Carolina's Lowcountry region. Now to the results. So the mean age of women in this study was 38. The majority of women were single, unemployed, and lived off of less than $10,000 per year. 48%, almost 48% of women reported having Medicare or Medicaid, while 43% had no health insurance. Mean years since diagnosis was 10 years, and that ranged from less than 1 year to 29 years. Women had a mean number of children of 2. The majority of the women were receiving treatment. 93% of women expressed no intent to become pregnant, and 45% expressed that they had sexual partners. So while I focused on pregnancy intentions, HIV-AIDS-related stigma was very pervasive in the data, so I'm actually just reporting on the data from stigma today. So I'm going to start off with my interview guide, and again, this was a semi-structured interview, but we did have 5 domains that we focused on, experiences living with HIV. Some of the questions included, please describe your experiences with the healthcare system. In what ways, if any, has your positive status changed your life? And who have you shared your HIV positive status with? So in coding the data, most of the stigma data was derived from these questions about women's experiences. This is when they talked about stigma. Study participants referred to stigma as one of the most pervasive and challenging aspects of living with HIV/AIDS. Women recounted emotional experiences of stigma most often imposed by family members, community members, healthcare providers, and other institutions. So one participant who's 46 with one child diagnosed in 2010 described interpersonal level stigma in this way. No, well, when it kind of came about, I got a cousin. She's mad at me. She's been mad at me for 6 months or whatever. She kind of like put it out there. Oh, that bitch got AIDS. She also described another example of another family member where she felt that she was actually experiencing some HIV/AIDS-related stigma. She commented, my son was backing off from me, doing all the little different things I used to do, like mixing his hamburger meat and stuff like that. So now I just take precautions. I use gloves for everything, and normally I'll put on one of them face masks. It don't make me feel bad. So that was one example of interpersonal level stigma manifesting. Another participant, 19, with 2 children, diagnosed in 2007, stated, well, at first, like I told you, my mom found out I was HIV. She didn't want me to be around my kids. She didn't want my kids to sleep with me, and that kind of throwed a dent in there with me. Because it hurt. My kids can't catch it by touching and kissing on them. I'm good with my kids, you know. I'm like a regular parent. One participant, 35, with 5 children, illustrated stigma in this way. My other family members for a long time, I had to use plastic forks and stuff because they didn't understand it. But I guess now they do because they come to my house now and they don't eat off of plastic. And she was diagnosed in 1996. One participant, age 45, with 1 child, said this. Oh, I've had, through an education part piece, I've had men in a prison told me I was probably no more than a murderer having a baby while I was HIV positive, knowing that I was HIV positive. So she was actually going into the prisons doing HIV/AIDS education, and the men made these comments about her being pregnant, living with HIV. So institutional level stigma was very pervasive, and some examples included stigma imposed by the healthcare system, daycares, prisons, in the workplace, and in churches. One participant at 43 with 2 children stated, there's still a lot of healthcare providers that live with stigma. I went to the emergency room. I was coughing because I had an attack with bronchitis. As they asked me questions during my intake, I was answering the questions coughing the whole time, and they said, ma'am, are you okay? Do you have anything else in your prior history that we need to talk about? I said, I'm HIV positive, and they said, hold on one moment, ma'am, and they came back with a mask to finish my interview. One participant, 45 with 1 child, stated, every visit, she's referring to healthcare providers, wanted to know whether I was going to get my tubes tied, and I always respond, no, because I'm going to have 5 more babies. And she actually had no more babies, but she wanted to make sure that she asserted that she had a right to have as many children as she wanted. Another participant at 38 stated, "Where I go to the clinic at, one of the nurses said, that's why I don't lay down with any and everybody. That's why I don't do this, that, and the other. And that made me upset." So she felt that she was being judged by the healthcare provider for being HIV positive. Another healthcare provider, healthcare system example. "A lot of back and forth, a lot of secrecy. I would take my prescriptions two towns over because I didn't want to run into anybody or have anybody in the pharmacy filling AZT. You know, for me in my hometown, it's a small town, isn't that big. So my aunt called me, she was working at Walmart, and somebody from the pharmacy came up to her and said I was HIV positive. So even though she tried to avoid stigma going to a different location, it still happened. She was still subjected to stigma. A participant 33 with one child stated, "My mother said you don't deserve to be a mother, so she told the daycare that I was positive and my son got kicked out of daycare. I tried to file a complaint against Human Affairs, but they were like, well, it wasn't against you. You were not in the daycare. And so they took me through a lot. They had him tested, but I couldn't really do anything about it, so I had to take him out of that daycare." And actually, after her son was tested, her son was actually negative, and they still wanted to kick him out. One participant, age 35, with four children, stated, "Actually, someone told me. It was somebody I was working with, and they was like, you know that lady telling people you got AIDS when you was locked up," and she's referring to a specific dorm where HIV-positive patients in prison stay. "So I called the prison and let the warden know and investigated, and they ended up firing her, but I should have ended up suing her." And there were several examples of women working in the workplace and their employers finding out that they were HIV positive, and women losing their jobs or deciding to leave their jobs because of this. One participant stated, "I got fired because of my job. I worked at Hardee's, and because they had a suspicion that I had the virus, but they didn't know. My boss knew because she also went to my grandparents' church, and so she kind of knew what was going on, but like she said, that wasn't for her to discriminate or to pick. Yeah, I got a lawyer." And finally, the church, there's a lot of literature that suggests that HIV-positive women experience high levels of stigma within the church setting. And this participant stated it this way. "My mother went to church and behind my back was telling everybody I was HIV-positive. And before long, the whole church knew. It was embarrassing and people were looking at me and were treating me bad because of my diagnosis. They themselves had handed me a death sentence, so I left the church." So what does all this mean? Well, women in this study describe the consequences of stigma, the social consequences, which included loss of privacy and confidentiality, and that was most often through the healthcare setting or the pharmacy, loss of respect, loss of autonomy and identity, loss of employment, embarrassment, and finally isolation. So we, as a research team, we also encountered ethical challenges in conducting this study. So initially we had trouble recruiting the population, so we employed snowball sampling. But in some instances, women recommended other women who may have not wanted their status disclosed, but just because, you know, they were trying to recruit them for the study, that was actually a challenge. There's this one instance where I was in a community and I conducted one interview, and someone informed me that someone else across the street was HIV positive. And actually on that same street, there were approximately three people who were HIV positive. So I was kind of concerned with driving around that people would see my car and then they would start thinking that I'm the HIV lady, and then, you know, everyone's status was going to be disclosed on the street. So that was a challenge, something that we had to deal with. Again, giving women recruitment materials, you know, thinking that if they take a flyer home that says, "Are you HIV positive?" that someone might find that flyer later on who wasn't aware of their status. And again, conducting interviews in women's homes when people could have possibly not known their status, or being in my car. These were all examples of unintentionally disclosing people's status, but it's something that we have to consider when we're doing research. So for conclusions, based on this study, of course, we were compliant to human subjects requirements, but it's not enough because we have to work towards anticipating some of the complexities that may surround stigma when working with HIV-positive patients specifically. Healthcare providers should also emphasize concern for the entire well-being of women and not just focusing on women as disease vectors or potential to infect other individuals. And finally, we should avoid, you know, just based on everything that was said today, further disadvantaging populations that are already vulnerable. Acknowledging University of South Carolina, the Department of Health, Promotion, Education, and Behavior, where I did my doctoral degree, the CDC for funding my research, and finally, recruitment sites. And I would, of course, like to dedicate all of this work to HIV-positive women, the women that I interviewed, the 42 women who they encouraged me and inspired me to continue to do this work. That's it. Questions?